You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
This one's for Pat! The ball is free! Denver's got it! Touchdown, Denver!
Here's your host of Locked On Broncos, NFL analyst Cody Rourke.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to a very special Friday edition of Locked On Broncos here. I'm your host, Cody Rourke, NFL analyst covering the Denver Broncos and the National Football League and columnist over at predominantlyorange.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Cody Rourke NFL.
And I'm your co-host, Cameron Parker, and I am a columnist as well over at Predominantly Orange. And be sure to follow the Predominantly Orange Twitter handle at Predom Orange, and you can follow me at Cameron Parker PO. And we are joined by a special guest who's also with Predominantly Orange, and that is Sayre Bettinger. How you doing, my man?
That's right. I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. Oh, yeah. Always awesome. This is my first time being on with both you guys.
Oh, man. Yeah. It goes back to the old Cameron Parker show days. I think that's the last time we were all in the same podcast together. But like always, Sarah, always a pleasure having you. I know the Locked On Broncos audience is well aware of who you are and the knowledge you bring to the table.
Definitely,
they appreciate you, and we always love having you here on the show. And so tonight on Locked On Broncos, it's a predominantly orange takeover. And, you know, that's actually a pretty cool way to say that. But what we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about just what we've experienced at training camp. Now, Sarah was at training camp with me on Wednesday. He was over there. He got to observe a lot. I got to observe a lot, and Cameron's over there over the weekend, and Cameron is going to be at training camp this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at the UC Health Training Center down there in Denver, Colorado. Beautiful facility, and I tell you what, we've had beautiful days of football. The weather's been absolutely amazing on the field. It's not too hot, but it's also not too cold. There's no wind, no rain. It's been perfect football weather. And Sarah, I think you went a little viral on Wednesday because you happened to catch some footage of Marquette King punting the football, trying to get him into the trash cans. Tell me all about that.
Yeah,
you blew
funny
up after that.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I don't know exactly when he started. I can't remember what period it was in practice. The offense and defense were doing 11 on 11, but it wasn't like a fast pace. Like, it wasn't 2-minute drill, or it wasn't like red zone or anything. It was kind of just like it almost looked like a scripted session. And so all eyes kind of drifted over towards Marquette King, who's got this red bucket down at, I don't know, about the 10-yard line, kind of close to the sideline ish. He was trying to get the ball in that bucket. And so I just kind of figured, you know what, on the off chance that he makes one in there, because I don't know, I feel like I've got that kind of confidence in him already. The off chance that he makes one in there, I want to get it on camera. And so I just started recording him. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all she wrote there. It was an amazing thing to watch, because you're talking about the punter drawing the attention of the fans. I mean, they were oohing and aahing as he's getting closer and closer to this bucket. And it was just funny, man. It was funny because of how ridiculously good he is.
Oh, man.
But then just the fans' reaction, you know, just the fans' reaction to a punter. I've never seen it before. And Twitter reacted accordingly. You know, it's just, it's interesting. It's training camp. You got to find those little things in training camp that keep people entertained. And so I guess that was one of them.
I love Twitter.
You know, but the biggest question, though, is how close did he get? Did he at least get it in the bucket?
Yeah. No, I never saw him get it in the bucket. I think that video that I posted is about as close as he got. That was about 3 or 4 yards, if I don't know. I don't remember exactly. I honestly didn't even watch the video before I posted it. I just knew that I had gotten him kicking it, and I knew that I had followed it to the bucket, and I was like, all right, well, we're going to post it and see what happens. So I think that was about as close. Watching it back, I'm pretty sure that was about as close as he got. But, man, that guy can do some stuff with the ball.
Sarah Bettinger joining us here from Predominantly Orange, editor over there, Predominantly Orange guy that we've had the opportunity to work with over the last couple years. Very phenomenal guy. We might even have a special appearance from his son. Very excited about that. He's growing, man. You got to get him decked out in that Broncos gear. But to touch base on Marquette King, he makes it look so effortless. You know, I was watching him just punt it when they were going through their team drills on special teams period, and he just makes it look so effortless. The way he just kicks the ball, you look at it, and it doesn't necessarily always travel the highest, but the ones that don't look like they travel the highest, they travel the furthest. He just rockets it down. And one thing that Tom McMahon, new special teams coordinator, and they have done this year, they've really emphasized sealing off a side of the field, so really trying to punt it to a sideline. That's one of the things they want to do so they can condense the field. When you punt it in the middle of the field, you have all this opportunity for a return guy to go either left, right, up the middle. They really want to do that, and that's something they've been working on. Marquette King, I tell you what, he makes it look effortless, and it sounds like a shotgun every time he hits the ball. It snaps, and it's just this loud boom. And like you said, anytime he punts the ball in the crowd, all I was hearing was, ooh, or ah.
Yeah.
And it makes it hard for the returners. His hang time, I timed one. It was at there at least 4.7 to even 5. I would even hazard a guess, say maybe even 5 seconds on one punt. That is ridiculous amount of time, especially when you have fast gunners to get down the field. Those were very impressive. We didn't see much from Brandon McManus during the whole entire period because, you know, the Broncos offense, defense, punting, and working on the little things. I think we'll see more of the kicking game evolve, and hopefully, Cameron, you can witness that this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. When I actually witnessed it on Saturday, I mean, you know, you're looking at a guy that is an absolute game changer, and, you know, especially for maybe, or at least by argument's sake, a guy that, at least with the unit, that was just underperforming last year. I mean, the special teams unit as a whole was dreadful, to put it lightly, or even, you know, maybe not so lightly. But, I mean, Marquette King, you're looking at a punter that it almost makes the Denver Broncos look like a complete team. when you have that type of game-changing punter that can kick it from the 20 and kick it inside the 20 on a regular basis. And it's almost like not fair when you basically have maybe one of the strongest legs in football, and he actually said that he would prefer to, you know, punt in the mile high air.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's almost like cheating in some ways, but I mean, you know, and it's probably one of the reasons why Sebastian Janikowski, a former Raider, loved kicking field goals in Denver.
Everybody
just because
loved.
Of that. Yes. Just because of that high altitude and the ability to, you know, make those, you know, in those punts or those field goals count. And so to have a potential game changer, you know, like Marquette King, it's going to lift, I think, a lot of the confidence of a lot of people in that special teams locker room. And one guy in particular could end up being Brandon McManus. And so I just think that, you know, it's just a signing that I could do a trickle-down effect, much like an Aqib Talib. And, you know, we're talking about a punter, but, I mean, you're looking at a guy that kind of exemplifies that same swagger, in essence, as an Aqib Talib. So who would have thought that the swagger that would be replaced by Aqib Talib is a punter by the name of Marquette King?
Hey, I see fake punts. I see fake field goal attempts with Marquette King rolling out. He's the holder. I'm excited about that because he is an athlete. Now, here's the golden nugget that really surprised me. On TV, I always thought Marquette King was around 6'1", 6'2". I thought he was a tall guy, but actually being out there on the practice field, I'm about 5'10", and that's with knee surgery. But going back on that and looking at him, he's not much taller than I am. He's maybe about 6 foot, 6'1", and to be honest with you, I was really surprised when I saw him at first. I was like, man, who's that guy? He looks really lean for a receiver. And I realized, dang, that's number one. That's Marquette King. And I almost forgot he was on a team for a second just because you see all the guys running out and wearing white jerseys. You know, usually he's the defense. And you see the Broncos guys usually wearing, you know, purple jerseys for the offensive side of the ball or the orange jerseys for the receivers. They always possess those right there. And for me, when I saw number one coming out in that way, I was like, man, who is that guy? And I realized that is Marquette King. And he's a guy we haven't really talked about much in the offseason. He's a big addition. But he's going to be one of those pickups that I think is really going to help. You know, we go back to the Broncos being ranked 26 last year in special teams production. Marquette King, the boost of having him alone to flip field position, to make it to where when the offense does have to go three and out, if they ever do, hopefully they never have to go. That'd be nice in a perfect world. But when they do have to punt the ball, you know you're getting it to a guy that can punt it down and completely change field position. And with the Broncos defense looking as aggressive as they do right now, I think that bodes very well for what the Denver Broncos could possibly be on paper heading into 2018. So, you know, when I go back and I look at all those things, those are some key elements that really have me excited about 2018. And I'm sure you guys, the fans, are also excited as well. But before we get to it, we're going to continue talking about training camp, what Sarah's witnessed, what I've witnessed, what Cameron has witnessed, and some things that we'd like to see also from some players in training camp over the next couple days. I'd like to remind you guys to go on iTunes and leave a review for Locked On Broncos. If you love listening to the show, then you can have a chance as well to also be rewarded for that. For being a listener of the show, if you go to iTunes and leave a review for Locked On Broncos and you include your Twitter handle in the review, you will be automatically entered into the Locked On Broncos contest giveaway that starts when the regular season happens every single month. Cameron and I will be doing a giveaway for either a Broncos signed jersey or some memorabilia that you can wear or have around your house. We just did one for training camp, and my man Richie Elliott down there in Utah, he won the Emmanuel Sanders figurine and the 2015 team poster and 2015 rally towel. He loved it, his kids loved it, and Locked On Broncos appreciates all you guys for listening to the show. So obviously, jumping back into it, you know, training camp, we've seen a lot. Now, Sarah, and I think we talked about this a little earlier in our little group text, but there are a lot of people, look, it's 5 days in. The Broncos have had five practices into NFL training camp, and you see a lot of overreaction. You see a lot of crazy takes, specifically at the quarterback position, even at the defensive backs. You know, guys are worried about the defensive backs, overanalyzing a little bit. Guys, we've had five practices as a professional football team. Denver Broncos have had five practices in, and we have these crazy skies falling takes with some of these positions. What are your thoughts on that, Sarah?
Yeah, I get a little tired of it, to be honest with you. I've read and heard some things about what people are saying about the quarterback position specifically, and that's the position that always seems to get overblown, right? It's the guys that get the ball in their hands every single play. They're judged on every single throw. It seems like people are charting, which I know that's I don't know if that's actually the case, but it really feels like people are charting training camp throws, which is ridiculous to me. I mean, you got to evaluate on a rep by rep basis. If a guy looks bad, he looks bad, but it is what it is. Like you said, we're 5 days into this thing, and these guys deserve the opportunity to work and get better and struggle. That's what practice is for.
Exactly.
I mean, what are we doing as a fan base if we're criticizing a guy like Paxton Lynch or Chad? Let's go to Chad Kelly, because Chad Kelly is essentially a rookie playing in his first NFL training camp, and we're talking about how terrible he. Well, of course he looks terrible sometimes. I mean, he's basically a rookie. The guy hasn't practiced in a live setting with full pads, going full speed ever in the NFL. And so, what do we expect? I think Broncos fans should figure out a way to set the example of really just being not necessarily too relaxed as a fan. I mean, we want to expect greatness, but give these guys a chance to develop. I mean, that's part of the NFL. It's not going to always be like the Cortland Suttons who come in and, my gosh, they're just blowing you away on every single play. I mean, that's rare. That's rare for rookies or young players to do that. And even in the case of Paxton Lynch, there's some rookies that are the same age as him. Yeah. I mean, the guy's just a young guy, and Bill Musgrave put it perfectly. He's like, what, did Memphis have eight plays on their playbook? Like, he just put it as bluntly as he possibly could. It's like, that's going to take some time for your young quarterback to get acclimated. And so I think a lot of these things do get overblown, especially the struggles, because you want to see these guys under the lights or in a game setting in general.
I completely agree with that, because, I mean, you're looking at a scenario of, you know, just the quarterback position. It's a quarterback-driven league, and I get it. I mean, I get why there's just so much hoopla and everything around the quarterback position, but, I mean, if there isn't growth to be had, or at least, should I say, you know, patience, and I think that's one of the things that is absolutely missing with Broncos country sometimes and with the fans, because we live in this day and age of the here and the now, and we want instant gratification. We want instant development to happen right away. And that's why the guys like Cortland Sutton, guys like the Deshaun Hamiltons, or these guys that are just the Philip Lindsays of the world that are just making a name for themselves right away, you know, that's why I guess it sort of gravitates. And that's all fun and good. But I mean, especially with Paxton Lynch, and especially with him having a great day down on Wednesday, you know, it's just I think it's a good sight to have, you know, but it certainly, you know, brings the point that he's just got to start to continue it. And, you know, to even further the Chad Kelly thing, I mean, Musgrave came away pretty impressed with Chad Kelly to even say that, you know, he will be taking reps with the second team. And so you're looking at an opportunity for Chad Kelly to even further his development and further the reps of having it with the second team. So the opportunity for Chad Kelly to grow and for him to be, you know, garnering all those repetitions, it's going to come. And fans just need to realize that, you know, Chad Kelly didn't take a snap at all last year. Nope. And so that they need to just continue to be patient. I mean, fans were patient with Cody Latimer.
Yeah.
And he's clearly, you know, at a much better place in his career than he was a few years ago.
Yeah. I think he's more mature right now. You know, and
more importantly than the fans, the team was patient with him.
Yes.
They gave him all 4 years.
And the team is going to be very patient with both Chad Kelly and Paxton Lynch. Now, look, Vance Joseph, I think, said it perfectly yesterday, and this is something that, you know, I think Vance is really, I think he's evolved a little bit during this offseason. I think last season he looks back at a lot of things as learning experiences, which is absolutely essential. It's a phenomenal thing. Vance Joseph has a good take on some of these things. You know, somebody asked the question yesterday, you know, you guys have had really good practices. You know, what's going on with that? You know, you guys worried about having bad practices? Vance Joseph said, well, you know, to the public eye, to the media's eye and everything like that, everything looks good. But on that certain play where Case Keenum rolled out and threw the ball and it was caught, yeah, great. But we had our offensive tackle blocked the wrong guy in pass pro. We had a mistake on the interior, giving up pressure through the A gap on that. He still got the ball out. But it's little things like that that coaches look at and they think, okay, look, these are areas where we made a mistake on a play. Yeah, you know what? The mistake, obviously, you know, the play was complete, successful. But going back to the anatomy of a play, the whole entire performance wasn't successful because we didn't operate effectively in our blocking scheme. Receiver ran the wrong route on one play. We don't know any of this because we don't know what the play is, you know, the plays that are being called. And we don't really see that sometimes. So that's kind of a cool thing to put things into perspective. Bill Musgrave said it best. Chad Kelly, Paxton Lynch, these guys are young. And this is a new year. Installing a brand new system, something that none of these guys had previously known. Period. It's a new system. They've done about 5 installs. They had, you know, obviously Thursday. They had Thursday off of practice, and they're going to get back onto it, obviously, Friday, Saturday, and get everything going with a couple more install periods. But primarily, the Broncos' entire offense isn't going to be installed probably up until the week leading to week one against the Seattle Seahawks. They're just not going to show their hand right away in preseason. So I agree with you, Sarah, and I agree with you, Cameron. Fans alike have to be as patient with players as teams are. Now, I get it. From a fan's perspective, you know, there's a lot of expectations. There's a lot of hype when guys come in, and it turns into this, well, this guy should be playing right now, but how come he's not playing right now? Well, he's not doing that well in practice. Players learn from practice. This, Bill Musgrave said it best. We want these guys to make mistakes because it gives us an opportunity to coach them on what to look for, you know, especially with the quarterbacks. You know, we had people picking apart quarterbacks in terms of, you know, there's a play where, you know, Chad Kelly in the center didn't have necessarily the cleanest exchange under center, but Chad Kelly's awareness, he picked it up and he ran for about 13-15 yards. Stuff like that, that's, you know what, he makes something out of nothing. And Paxton Lynch. Paxton Lynch had a really good day yesterday, and he connected with Tim Patrick on a beautiful deep ball that, Sarah, I know you had to see as well. And we're going to talk about Tim Patrick here in segment 3, but, you know, I think people need to be a little bit more patient. That we, you know, the day 5 after, you know, 5 practices, the sky is falling in certain areas with certain players. They're not meeting these expectations. Let's wait till we get to the NFL preseason. Okay, when we get to preseason week 1 next week, next Saturday against the Minnesota Vikings, then we can say, you know what, this player struggled in this element because we can watch it on film. We're going to have access to coaches' film. We're going to be able to see things from a different perspective. And sure, obviously, we're going to get a new perspective on it because we're going to watch it live. We're going to go back and watch the replay and we're like, okay, you know what? This is where something actually went wrong here. People are going to talk about it, but have patience, ladies and gentlemen. It's so important. You know, I coach football myself and I always have to have the same approach with some of my younger guys that aren't as quite refined yet in technique or skills compared to some other guys. I have to be patient with those young men because if I'm not, then I'm wasting their development. I'm wasting their opportunity to develop. The Broncos have a ton of young talent. We're going to talk about the young talent in our next segment coming up here in just a minute, but they have a lot of young talent that can really make a lot of plays, and unfortunately, you know, they can't keep everybody, so they're going to have to make some tough decisions, but I'm very excited about that. Some young wide receivers, young defensive backs, young guys all across the board, and we're going to talk about that here in just a moment on segment 3. But before we get to all that, I want to take the time to tell you guys, go check out Ryan Tracy and Chris Clark, host of Locked On Chiefs. They bring you the inside enemy intel of your AFC West divisional rival Chiefs, and I'm very excited about that because we're going to be having crossover shows as soon as the regular season commences. We're going to be talking with Ryan and Chris over there, Locked On Chiefs, your local experts bringing you the biggest stories, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Young guys galore. Now, Sarah, Cameron, this has been a hot topic. The Broncos this year at wide receiver, they have a ton of talent. It's unbelievable actually going through and looking at those guys, looking at the lineup of receivers that the Broncos have had in past years, and then you look at the roster right now with guys that they currently have. They have a lot of untapped talent. You got River Craycraft, Tim Patrick, and John Diars. Some very talented guys. I wanted to get your thoughts on that, Sarah, on some of these guys like Tim Patrick, because you kind of did a little piece on him today over at predominantlyorange.com. Talking about his evolution as a player and how he's really extending to reach out and he's taking a roster spot, because this guy has been super impressive in camp, and you have a little bit of a tidbit on his career coming up into the NFL.
Yeah, really interesting story. If any of your listeners get a chance, go find Tim Patrick's Twitter page. He's got a pinned tweet with an article just kind of outlining his college career and what happened. Some crazy stuff happened in his upbringing and everything. Just the fact that he even was able to get a scholarship to college academically, just even to qualify, the work that he had to put in, the things that he had to overcome. But then after he got there, you know, there's so many stories about guys getting injured. But not a lot. You don't hear a lot about compound fractures of legs and guys coming back from those. Tim Patrick went through a lot of adversity, compound fracture in his leg. Said that he felt like a baby in a 21-year-old man's body trying to learn how to walk again after he had that compound fracture and four different procedures to try and fix it. So he ends up only really playing one full season of college ball at Utah. And in that season, I mean, he even only played 10 games, and he had four games, I think they said, where he was battling with a injured ankle. So he goes undrafted, gets picked up by the Baltimore Ravens. And then on July 30th, he gets waived by Baltimore. And on July 31st, Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, and the San Francisco 49ers pick him up. And then 2 weeks after that, the Denver Broncos head to Santa Clara to practice against the San Francisco 49ers. And I'm not saying that they sat there and just watched Tim Patrick, but you know what? I bet you they saw him when they watched those practice film back. And from that point, that kind of was the beginning of their relationship. And you know, obviously, the Broncos, too, they've got kind of a pipeline coming out of Utah, more players on the roster from Utah than any other school. But for them to have those intra-squad practices, to be able to see him up close after he was just – and in that moment, I mean, he's 2 weeks in. He hasn't learned the offense fully. He's just raw talent at that point. So the Broncos are just evaluating raw talent and potential. And so then in October, they pick him up and put him on the practice squad, and a week later he's on the active roster, and then a couple weeks after that he's back on the practice squad. And just a really interesting journey, working with the first team offense during OTAs, getting some reps with the first team here at training camp. I'm intrigued by this guy.
Yeah.
Height, weight, speed, hands, route running. That was another cool thing in that article, too, that you can read about. Just what the emphasis that he says he places on route running, because a lot of guys that are that size, I think he's listed at 6'5", 210.
Yeah.
A lot of guys that size are just kind of lumberers down the field or long striders, but he's got some quick feet. Reminds me a lot of Jordan Taylor in that regard, just the quick feet. But I think he's got a little bit better body composition, maybe a little bit more consistent in terms of the hands, but got that big playability. You talked about that throw from Paxton Lynch, which, by the way, I don't think I've seen a better throw at training camp than that one. I mean, that was crazy.
Media
it was
row,
really nice.
Media row was going crazy for that. Just the perfect touch. And that's something that Bill Musgrave's been working on with the quarterbacks, is things like altitude on ball placement, you know, altitude, different angles, understanding the anatomy of that. So much more than what guys really learn at college. Obviously, you've Paxton Lynch 8 plays at Memphis, but it was a beautiful play. Tim Patrick, even more beautiful catch. It just perfectly placed for Tim Patrick on the outside where the DB couldn't get to it. Big, big play. And I believe, wasn't it Isaac Yadam him on the coverage on that? I'm not sure if it was or not, or if it was CJ Smith.
I can't remember who it was.
But it was
it was one of those guys.
It was a younger guy, but you know, guys like him are standing out in practice, making plays. And even Deshaun Hamilton alongside with him in that session with Paxton Lynch. Mm-hmm. Paxton Lynch has found a very good connection right now with Deshaun Hamilton. It almost seems like, whether it be Case Keenum or Paxton Lynch, Deshaun Hamilton is consistently making plays, and he's one of the guys that is making plays at the receiver position alongside Emmanuel Sanders, who Sanders has had had a phenomenal camp. And then Courtland Sutton out of the blue, you know, the first couple days, you know, first day he was kind of a little bit under the radar. And then from day two and so on and so forth, he's always making these highlight reel catches in practice with tough coverage against Bradley Roby, against Chris Harris Jr. And I tell you what, seeing him flexed out in a trips formation with Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, and being able to move those guys inside out as Bill Musgrave plans to, that's going to be scary, especially when they get in the red zone and then they have a tight end, either Austin Traylor or even Jake Butt on the opposite side of them, because that's where they're working a lot of different sets there. But spreading them out a little bit, that's going to make the Denver Broncos very, very dangerous. So, you know, we talked about the young guys, but let's kind of change note a little bit, because last night was the Pro Football Hall of Fame game, preseason week one action between the Bears and the Ravens. And, you know, a lot of it is it's good to have football back. But if you were watching it, I know I was watching, I know you guys were watching it. You know, they mentioned they showed Brian Dawkins on the TV. They were interviewing him, but not once did they make any mention that he played as a Denver Bronco for two seasons. And mind you this, Brian Dawkins went to the Pro Bowl two seasons as a Denver Bronco, but he didn't get any recognition as a T.O. got recognition in a Bills uniform, so on and so forth. So, you know, what do you guys think about that? I feel like the national media has this bias when it comes to Hall of Fame players. Anything that has to mention with the Denver Broncos in the Hall of Fame, I feel like Denver gets left out exclusively. And I don't know if I'm the only one that feels this way, but what are your guys' thoughts on that? We'll go with you, Sarah, and then obviously Cameron.
Yeah, it's a shame. You know, it's a shame for such a historic franchise. I think the biggest travesty is the fact that Pat Bowlen's not in the Hall of Fame. And unfortunately, with his condition, he won't be able to savor that moment that he so deserves. That's long overdue. It just is. And it's a shame to see, you know, there's a lot of guys in the media, and you hate to point fingers, but there's a lot of guys in the media who just don't like John Elway because they couldn't beat him. You know, they couldn't beat him. And specifically, you know, we're looking at Chris Collinsworth, you know, back from his playing days. And you know, I'm not trying to be petty about it or anything, but it is what it is. I mean, you know, you notice those kind of things. And to specifically not mention a guy like Brian Dawkins is just that's just crazy. I mean, he at least, even for the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles, I mean, he deserves a shout out. You know, I mean, he was a big part of that organization, and then to come in with the Denver Broncos and to be a mentor for one of the worst teams in you know, team history. I mean, he's just a consummate professional. He deserves the recognition. He deserves to be talked about during a meaningless preseason game. At the very least, right? I mean, yeah. So I think the Denver Broncos, they do get the raw end of the deal a lot of times when it comes to the Hall of Fame. I mean, look at Terrell Davis. I mean, just having to scratch and claw his way in. I mean, and it seems more obvious to us as Broncos fans who have the sentimental connection to these guys, and just to say, look, I mean, this is a guy that helped our team win two Super Bowl championships. But maybe to other, you know, the other team fan bases and those, you know, those voters, maybe Terrell Davis is just a guy who, well, yeah, he was a flash in the pan. He was really good for a couple of years, and then he was gone. But I mean, when you boil it down, I mean, what did Terrell Davis not accomplish other than just racking up meaningless yards over the course of a career? I mean, let's be honest about it. He did everything: MVP, Super Bowl MVP, 2,000 yards, led the league in rushing, all those different things. And so I think it's time for something there to change.
I agree with you. And I think, you know, even piggybacking off of the Brian Dawkins, you know, thing, and I understand it completely. He spent the bulk of his career with Philadelphia. So, I mean, that should at least dominate at least a good majority of a conversation. But, I mean, you also can't ignore the fact that he also was with another team. And in particular, I mean, yes, he was with a really bad team, but I mean, he was even with the 2011 team with Tim Tebow, which was arguably, we look at Denver Broncos defenses in its history. The 2011 defense is up there. And he was a big focal point with that team. He was a big time leader with the team. He was one of the bigger vocal leaders. I mean, they had a lot of vocal leaders on that team, and he was maybe right near the top and with the other guy wearing 15. So, I mean, he was definitely right there, you know, with that team and growing. I mean, he made two Pro Bowl appearances with the Denver Broncos. And it just, so even with the short amount of time that he was with the Denver Broncos, the impact was still long, long felt, you know, for that team. And, you know, and even for guys that were past Denver Broncos, it feels like you're looking at guys that really should be in, you know, guys like, I mean, Rainey Gratishar and Kara Mecklenburg and, you know, so some of those guys. And we did our all-time Denver Broncos list over at Predominantly Orange. You guys can go check that out. But, I mean, guys like Rainey Gratishar and Kara Mecklenburg, you know, are guys that do go completely under the radar as far as the Hall of Fame committee. They'll go into the semifinalist list and everything, but, you know, to even cross that, you know, extra bridge to even be potentially a finalist and even cross that bridge of becoming into the Hall of Fame is in some ways a travesty. I mean, you know, to even use another example, let's look at Floyd Little for a little bit. I mean, Floyd Little was a guy that, I mean, he packed a lot of production for a Denver Broncos team back in the day that really he should have been maybe not a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he should have been at least a second. He should have been in. He should have been in a lot earlier than he was. And, you know, I think back to Floyd Little, and if he was, let's just say, on the Dallas Cowboys teams of those years, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Just simple as that, just because of how talented he is as a runner. And because at that point in time, the Dallas Cowboys were America's team. So basically the notoriety would have garnered it and rose him up to a level that he would have been in the Hall of Fame much quicker. So there is potentially a bias, I believe, with the Denver Broncos and
no
with
question.
The Hall of Fame.
No question about it. I mean, it's evident. To be honest with you, it is very evident. Look, Jerry Jones is in the Hall of Fame, but to be honest with you, when going back to that, when Charlie Casserly a couple years ago made the claim for one of his good close friends to get into the Hall of Fame over Pat Bowlen, that I immediately knew right away that there was a discrepancy in Pro Football Hall of Fame. Now, look, if guys like Steve Atwater played in other teams like Dallas or New York, I guarantee you they would already have a bust in Canton. Plain and simple. And it's just evident, and it's unfortunate. Even the Chargers have, I think, more Hall of Fame players right now in the Hall of Fame than the Denver Broncos, to be honest with you.
That's pathetic.
That is ridiculous. Yeah. The Denver Broncos have been to, I believe, the second most amount of Super Bowls in NFL franchise history, and behind the Patriots, and they don't have hardly any Pro Football Hall of Fame members in there. The guys that are in there are absolutely deserving, but there are more people who are deserving. Pat Bowlen, no question about it. He should be the guy that gets in right away. He should be one of the first selections because he wasn't this year. He should be the first selection to get inducted into the Hall of Fame next year for the Hall of Fame. Steve Atwater deserves it. And the Broncos, you know, Champ Bailey is going to be eligible next year to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. We'll see if he gets in because he was one of the best cornerbacks. You talk to a lot of scouts. You talk to a lot of analysts around the National Football League. You ask them about Champ Bailey. He's well-respected. You ask Steve Smith about Champ Bailey. That's one of the toughest corners that I've ever faced in my life. You don't get compliments from Steve Smith. He doesn't compliment anybody. He compliments Champ Bailey, though. And to be honest with you, Champ Bailey changed the evolution of the NFL cornerback position. And people want to say that Richard Sherman's better than him. I don't agree with that.
No.
Richard Sherman's not even close to being on Champ Bailey's level. Richard Sherman, a phenomenal corner. Absolutely. Don't get me wrong. He is a cover three cornerback primarily. Champ Bailey, he followed the best wide receiver around all the way across the field. And the Indianapolis Colts, when Peyton Manning was playing with them, they tried to game plan to where they would motion Reggie Wayne all the way across the field and back. And guess who was following him? Champ Bailey. Every single time. Things like that, I don't know if a lot of voters take into consideration the impact of positions that these guys have had in their career. They just look based off of stature and status, and there are a lot of guys deserving to be in the Hall of Fame right now. I don't know if you guys had the opportunity to check it out, but you know, if you're done listening to this episode, go to Marquette King's Twitter and go read the tweet he posted on Thursday evening about Terrell Owens. I die laughing. I almost spit out my coffee reading it, but You know, I think this is a year, the next 2 years is going to be very promising. I believe, what is it, in 2020 or 2021, Peyton Manning will be eligible for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I think another guy that is going to be a first ballot selection. Now, if he's not, I guarantee you there is a bias against the Denver Broncos.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There should be a widespread investigation launched about that whole entire thing, but it's frustrating. You know, we've shared this frustration in a lot of our group chats that the Denver Broncos are getting overlooked in a lot of categories. They, you know, when they were playing Super Bowl 50, overlooked. I'm okay with that when it comes to teams overlooking them, the media overlooking them in terms of the regular season and how they may play against a team. I think that fuels the team to perform a lot better and to rise up to the challenge. But when it comes to things like the Hall of Fame, something that is really out of control of a lot of people, except for a few, obviously, board members, to be honest with you, there's a little bit of a shade there that I'm not too happy about. It makes me a little upset and frustrated because a lot of these guys have donated their lives, their careers to football, and they played a major part of the organization and just the evolution of the NFL. Pat Bowlen, I'm sorry, without Pat Bowlen, who knows what the NFL TV rights would look like right now. Pat Bowlen was very instrumental in the NFL evolving to become a very prominent figure in the sports world and obviously in television. So those are my frustrations. Those are my vents. And unfortunately, we don't have enough time to keep going because I could talk about this for another 2 hours. But we're going to have Sarah Bettinger on here again on Locked On Broncos. We love when he joins us here. Obviously, you can catch all of Sarah's work and Cameron's work and my work and the great staff at Predominantly Orange, a great group of guys. Head over to PredominantlyOrange.com right now to stay up to date for all the latest news, analysis, and updates of all things Denver Broncos. And hey, if you don't want to go to the site and you just want to have easy access, download the Predominantly Orange app from your Google or your Apple and or your iPhone stores, and you can have instant notifications whenever an article is posted on the website. You can join the discussion as well.
Oh, wait, there's more. And also be sure to check out Sayer Bettinger's podcast.
The juice
is loose. The juice is loose. Make sure you guys go check out The Juice down with Brandon Keckler and Sayer Bettinger. They have a great podcast down there. And
We recommend them.
We absolutely recommend them. I mean, firsthand. I mean, yeah, they're great guys, and the content was great. I mean, one of the episodes that I was on, they actually documented how talented the 2008 team in particular was, and so it's a fascinating podcast, and they delve into a lot of topics. Am I right, man?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I feel pretty good about it. I just got a new microphone. I don't know if you guys can tell. I know you can tell the sound difference. You gotta at least lie to me about that.
Oh yeah,
so yeah,
it sounds beautiful, man. Honestly, you guys have a great setup going over there, talking Broncos, and even connecting some things. Even if you're a Star Wars fan, they make some jokes, they make some analogies in there that you will obviously connect with. You know, they do a great job over there. You can follow Sarah on Twitter at Sarah Bettinger. You can follow Cameron Parker on Twitter at Cameron Parker PO. Follow the Locked On Broncos Twitter handle at Locked On Broncos, and you can give me a follow on Twitter as well at Cody Rourke NFL. That'll do it for tonight's episode of Locked On Broncos, bringing it to you on Friday. Stay tuned on Saturdays. We have a week, the best of Locked On Broncos, the best segments from the week airing on Saturdays, and we'll see you on Monday for another episode of Locked On Broncos. Be sure to follow Cameron on Twitter. It's especially important because he is going to be at training camp Saturday and Sunday. He's going to tweet you some updates while over there at the UC Health Training Center in Denver. This is Cody Rourke speaking for Cameron and speaking for Sarah. We're bringing it to you again for another episode of Locked On Broncos. Have a good evening.